We have a quorum of the committee. We have Representative Ellis, Representative Miller, Representative Martin, and myself, Max Gruenberg. We have two bills on the calendar today. The first is House Bill 86, an act requiring employers to permit employees and former employees to have access to their personnel files. And the second is the so-called Motor Voter Bill, House Bill 93, an act relating to voter registration. We may consider a narrower title on that unless we want to make it an omnibus bill. I'd like the record to reflect also the presence of Vice Chair Mike Davis. And we have people online in Anchorage only, is that correct? Prepared to testify on House Bill 86. We have Jamie Bollenbach from the ACLU in Anchorage. And by the way, if people want to testify on the other bill, also we're delighted to get their testimony. We have Dennis Dowdy to observe. I hope I pronounced your name correctly, sir. If you wish to testify, please let the moderator there know. And we have Beverly Ward from ARCO, Alaska here to testify on House Bill 86. We also have Ginger Bain representing the Labor and Commerce Committee to testify on House Bill 86. And it'd be my intent to take Ms. Bain first on behalf of the sponsor, and then to take Mr. Bollenbach, and then Ms. Ward in that order. Would that present a timing schedule problem for you, Ms. Ward, if that's okay? And Mr. Bollenbach, I'll assume that's okay with you unless you let the moderator know to the contrary. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on House Bill 86? If not, Ms. Bain, would you please come up, give us your name, spell your last name, and who you represent? Yeah, you have to put that on.
Just push it down. Good afternoon. My name is Ginger Bain. I'm the aide of the House Labor and Commerce Committee, the prime sponsor of House Bill 86. House Bill 86 was introduced in request of various labor organizations by the House Labor and Commerce Committee to extend to employees across the state, both private and public, the same rights that most employees already enjoy, either under a collective bargaining agreement or simply from good management practices. The measure simply allows a person, an employee or former employee, to have access to their own personnel file and all the information within that file, including the right to copy that information. The employer has a right to charge reasonable costs of duplicating, and the employee can only access that information at reasonable hours. There is in your packets a brief legal opinion from the legislative drafter in response to a question that some businessmen were concerned about, and that is whether or not there is anything in this measure that required employers to keep personnel files. And the response from the drafters is no. This bill is silent on that. It simply says that if you have the personnel files, you have to let employees have access to them. But there's nothing here that requires you to keep them, whether you do or not. House Bill 86 is identical to the House Judiciary Committee substitute on House Bill 540, introduced by the House Labor and Commerce Committee last year. That measure passed the House 38-2, but died in the Senate on adjournment without reaching the floor for a final vote. I believe the bill is very clear, it's short, to the point. It covers all employees, both public and private. There's nothing in this bill, however, that interferes with or supersedes a collective bargaining agreement in case that agreement has made other arrangements for access to personnel files. I'll be available for questions. I'd be happy to help.
I'd like the record also to reflect that we have Mr. Goddard, Dean Goddard, and David Otto from the Department of Administration. And you're here to observe, but we would appreciate it if you'd be available to answer committee questions. Is that okay, gentlemen? Representative Davis.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question, Ginger, on the employer. And I assume you probably looked at this, but does this include places like Alaska Valley Finance, any of the corporations of the state? And I don't know if it, I've seen other definitions which seem to be broader than this, or did you wish to exclude those other entities that are corporations of the state?
In response to the chair, the original version of this bill introduced last year was introduced by a House Labor and Commerce Committee that felt very strongly that any requirements that one places on private sector businesses should also be placed on the public, on public sector areas. The fact is to our knowledge, the state of Alaska, through its division of personnel and all the political subdivisions of the state, already require, as a matter of their personnel policy, that employees have access to their personnel files. we included the public here to appease those groups that wanted to make sure that we weren't requiring anything of private persons, that the public wasn't required to provide also. Specifically, we were requested at some point in the process of the bill last year to include very specifically the University of Alaska, which in my understanding is in some cases it's been a question as to whether or not they are a political subdivision of the state, and the Alaska Railroad, because my recollection, and I'm sorry I don't recall this as clearly as I should, my recollection was there is some specific testimony that there was some problem with the railroad, and we were asked to include them specifically so that they would not believe that they were other than a political subdivision of the state. Otherwise, if you've seen in other bills, for instance, House Bill 91 that was before us, that spells out a whole list of public agencies to make sure, those are all traditionally and legally considered political subdivisions of the state. We were requested to list those agencies out specifically in that bill so that the average layperson reading the bill was very clear that those agencies were covered. We had not been asked to do this with this bill, and so we were satisfied with simply defining it as the state and any political subdivision.
Does that answer your question, sir?
I think so, as long as it's clear that places like you said, like Alaska Power Authority, Alaska Housing Finance are included. I've never heard of them called political subdivisions of the state, but if that's your interpretation, then it should be covered.
Through the chair, our explanation for the drafter is that those public corporations are specifically included in the definition of political subdivisions of the state.
Thank you.
I have a similar question, and I think the answer is going to be similar, Ms. Bain. Just for the record, REAAs and school districts would also be covered under the definition of employer, right?
They would.
Thank you. Other questions of the committee members for Ms. Bain? Hearing none, thank you. Why don't you just stand by, because in case we may have more questions. Next person I have to testify is Mr. Bollenbach. Mr. Bollenbach, are you there in Anchorage?
Yes, I am. My name is Jamie Bollenbach. I represent the Alaska Civil Liberties Union. I'd like to state that the Alaska Civil Liberties Union supports HB 86. The union is interested in this as an issue of fairness in employment within the private and public sectors. But the recent Alaska Supreme Court decision restricting the privacy rights of private sector employees under our state constitution, legislative action to grant employees the right to inspect and copy their own personnel file is laudable. Employers as well as employees have an interest in this legislation. The accuracy of the information in the file may depend on an employee's ability to examine and review the contents of the file. Information contained in these files is often critical, obviously, to an employee's career. An accurate file facilitates fair dealing for the employee and the employer's ability to properly evaluate their employees. The recognition that information in the files may not always be accurate was part of the reason the Federal Freedom of Information Act granted individuals the right to inspect files kept on them by some federal agencies. Basic fairness in employment also requires that a person at least be entitled to know the reasons for adverse employment action. An inaccurate and poorly kept personnel file can also follow an employee around when looking for other work. It is difficult and sometimes impossible for an employee to evaluate whether information traded between a former and prospective employer is correct without the employee's ability to inspect the file. Over the course of last year, our office has received a number of complaints on issues similar to this, and most of these folks, unfortunately, have no redress. If the information is wrong and it does harm their chances of employment, at present, there's not much an employee can do about it. Some common law protections exist, but these tend to be libel and slander, defamation of character, or emotional distress claims. The conduct of the employer must usually be quite outrageous for such a claim to stand, and since many people in this situation are unemployed and therefore don't have much money, their ability to sue is also extremely limited. The simplest way to avoid many of these problems and more lawsuits between employers and employees would be to grant the right to inspect the personnel file. Most employers and employees are conscientious, and I believe that disputes over the accuracy of the information within the files would tend to work out informally. If not, and the accurate and inaccurate information does remain in an employee's file, employees would at least know what to expect when seeking promotion or looking for other work. As a matter of public interest, state and federal law limits inquiry into an employee's marital status, religious beliefs, race, sex, or national origin, and passage of HB 86 creates an additional check on discrimination in employment. An unscrupulous employer who kept files on a person's religious beliefs, for example, would risk the employee finding out and pursuing a legitimate discrimination claim. At least seven states have similar statutes: California, Michigan, Connecticut, Maine, Oregon, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. And I believe this would be a step in the right direction for Alaska. HB 86 would keep the information in personnel files limited to legitimate business interests, contribute to the accuracy of that information, and would promote fair dealing between employers and employees. I'd be happy to answer any questions on behalf of the union.
Questions of Mr. Bollenbach. Would you please spell your name for the record, sir?
B-O-L-L-E-N-B-A-C-H.
Thank you very much. Questions for Mr. Bollenbach? Hearing none, thank you very much. Next, I will take Mr. Daugherty.
He is approaching the mic.
Thank you very much. And is there anybody else there in Anchorage, or is that everybody there?
This is the moderator in Anchorage, and he will be the last person to testify.
Thank you, and then we'll take Ms. Ward here.
Good afternoon. My name is Dennis Doughty, D-O-U-G-H-T-Y. I represent the United Food and Commercial Workers Local 1496. I'm here today to testify on behalf of House Bill 86. I'll try and keep it short and sweet. We just feel like the working people in Alaska ought to have this information. With new laws that are being enacted, more and more information is going into these personnel files. Best comparison I can give is comparing it to a credit report. If you go down and apply for a loan to buy an automobile, for example, and your credit is turned down for whatever reason, they have the obligation to give you the information and tell you why that credit was returned down. Without access to personnel files, any information could be given. It could eventually haunt an employee trying to find work anywhere he would apply for a job without any way to verify. I also believe that if this was open information, the discrepancies or disputes that would arise in a personnel file would be solved when they're a small or minor problem and not go into litigation. That's all I have to say.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dowdy. I'm sorry to have mispronounced your name there at first. Are there questions for Mr. Dowdy? If not, thank you very much, sir. Ms. Ward.
Mr. Chairman, would this allow me to get
You have to flip the thing on. We're on television.
Would this allow me to get my personnel file from the Democratic Party? I'd like to know what you said about me.
I think that you need it. Do you want me to repeat that for the people?
You don't need to file with the Democrats. Come on.
I haven't found that high yet.
Would you please give us your name, spell your last name, and the group you represent?
Peter's right there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mary Ward. I'm Director of Government and Community Relations for ARCO Alaska, Inc. We appreciate the opportunity to say a few words about this legislation. ARCO Alaska is the largest private employer in the state of Alaska. We have some 2,600 employees in the state. And as you can imagine, with that number of employees and former employees, personnel issues are more than just of a little interest to us. I agree with just about everything that the previous speakers have said about this legislation. In fact, ARCO fully supports the intent of this bill. And in fact, we're already practicing, I think, what is the intent of this bill, too. We currently allow our employees to have full access or access to their full personnel files at any time during normal business hours. And the way our personnel regulations work right now is rather than making Xerox copies of everything that's in the file, an employee has the right to review the entire file, take any kind of notes he wants, and then also put anything into the file, say something in rebuttal to something that's in the file, or to place anything in his personnel file that he wishes. So for instance, if you've had a nice letter of commendation written to you from somebody in the company or outside of the company for that matter, and you would like to have that placed in your personnel file, you can do it at any time. You don't have to have your boss put things in the personnel file, as an example. We do have a couple of questions or concerns about this bill, and I would like for you to at least consider some of the things that we're looking at here, because I don't think the bill as written fully addresses some of those concerns. One of the things is that we feel that it might encourage a large number of employees to inspect and request copies of information in their personnel files, which could create a consuming, time-consuming, disruptive administrative activity. With the proliferation of Xerox machines, you know, everybody thinks that, you know, you can copy the world. You write a memo to somebody and you can now copy 500 people. Back in the goldie-oldie days, you had a secretary who could only write type one letter with four carbon copies max or something, and that's all the number of people you could copy on something. But because Xerox machines are so easy to obtain for all of us, we think that, well, just Xerox my file. And it actually can become more of an administrative burden than you think it is. And just to be able to pass along the Xeroxing costs wouldn't begin to cover some of the administrative costs. And as I get into my testimony, I think you'll see how that could become a problem for a large employer. Another problem we have is the ability of former employees to have access to their files. Now, I understand why labor unions and other people are thinking that this is a good idea for former employees. But again, for a very large company, the number of former employees you have is as greater than the number of current employees you have. And so, although you are required by federal law to keep some personnel files for X number of years, the fact that this bill does not specify how long you have to keep a personnel file available to the former employee could be a problem. Is this for like 6 months after he's left the company, or 1 year, or 5 years, or 10 years? Are you going to have to indefinitely keep the personnel file available to that employee? In our case, we keep the personnel file in a filing cabinet in the personnel department for 1 year after the employee has left the company. Then that material is boxed up and sent to the permanent records retention facility. In Anchorage, that happens to be a warehouse kind of building in Anchorage. But in some of our facilities, it would mean that the records retention facility is not even in the same town where the employee once worked. So if it's an employee who, say, worked for the company 5 years ago, it would require, you know, getting those documents out of records retention, which isn't going to just be a matter of opening up a file cabinet and pulling out a file. So the bill doesn't address how far back you have to keep these records, and we think that's a possible problem. Another possible problem is that some personnel files could contain proprietary information that, again, if the employee were just taking notes on it, chances are that information would not be revealed in a way that would disclose that proprietary information. But if you just Xerox the entire page, and then God knows where it's going to wind up in whose hands next, that might contain some proprietary information, such things as salary. In an industry like the oil industry, the salaries are pretty competitive. We always want to know exactly what our competitors, Exxon and BP, are paying for people, and they're always trying to find out what we have to pay to get engineers, and particularly certain classes of employees whose skills are more critical. That the salary information is just one kind of proprietary information. There could be all sorts of things in there that might cause us some heartburn if just en masse they were Xeroxed and handed out to other people. Excuse me. And finally, sometimes a person's personnel file contains not only information about that employee, but it also references other employees. As an example, sometimes if there has been a disciplinary action on an employee, it's very common that there were more than one employee involved in that. And so sometimes there's a memo in your file saying that Joe, Tom, and Steve were all involved in a fight or something. And so if you allow the employee to Xerox that letter, there's nothing to keep him then from broadcasting that these other two employees were also disciplined or involved in it. And it could work the other way too. Sometimes these are letters commending employees for something that they have done. And in the interests and the rights of privacy of these other employees, you have to be careful that their privacy hasn't been disturbed too. So those are some of the things that we have a little heartburn over the bill. We sure support the intent of it, and indeed we are already practicing the intent of it. I talked to our manager of employee relations this morning before preparing my comments, and I asked him about Xeroxing. Do we allow employees already to Xerox some things? The things that you can always have Xerox from your file would include your annual performance review and your personal resume. And without question, we always allow employees to do that. And of course, we have to do the Xeroxing. We don't give them their entire file and say, here, you go to the Xerox machine, because then we can't vouch for the fact that 100% of the material got back in it. So it's always going to have to be an administrative action on our part. We're going to have to be doing the Xeroxing. Those personnel files belong to us. And so we have to safeguard them and make sure that they're controlled in that sense. But so those two documents we always allow an employee to have access to. But as a matter of course, you know, if an employee says, gee, here's this really nice letter that my boss wrote me, would you mind Xeroxing it? We take you to the Xerox machine and do it for them. You know, we're not going to be hard-nosed about things like that. But there are other things in there that would have to require permission from a manager or someone if we were going to allow a Xerox copy of that. We think that employees have the right to access to their files, and we encourage them to do that. We frequently put out memos to the fact that, you know, at any time you have a right to go to your personnel file and ask to see what's in it and make any kind of comments, written or otherwise, that you wish. Be glad to answer any questions if you have some.
Representative Goldman, thank you.
Just one question. You spoke of proprietary information, and I didn't quite understand that. It seemed that, sure, if salary was the example, that, you know, person's salary information, once they had it, but I guess, I'm not sure if the phrase fall into the wrong hands is appropriate, but nonetheless, but that would be equally true of their paycheck or the stub or anything else. Do you have other examples that might suggest there's a problem here? Because I wasn't really convinced by that.
Sometimes there are other things, you know, yeah. The sometimes there is information about contracts and sales, or about purchases that the company has made, or something. There could be that kind of data that we, you know, you never know what's in a personnel file. There could be lots of things, and that the salary one was just one thing that came to mind right away.
Thanks a lot.
Wouldn't that be covered under the phrase on lines 15 and 16, Ms. Ward, under reasonable rules? I think that what the concerns you are expressing would be covered by that phrase, that you would simply have reasonable rules to cover such proprietary information or information that would be harmful to other employees, that would be perfectly protected under this.
I suppose so. But, you know, when I read reasonable rules, I thought that that pertained to reasonable rules of regular business hours. I did not realize that, you know, to me that modifies the business hours, the reasonable rules of business hours.
No, because otherwise you would just say during regular business hours. You wouldn't need to say under reasonable rules. I don't think that phrase would, as a matter of law, limit you from doing exactly what you're suggesting.
In limiting the comments, well, except this bill says that it would allow them to Xerox materials.
Correct. It deals with personnel information concerning the employee.
Right.
And one of the two examples you gave was personnel information concerning another employee.
Right.
And certainly, since it doesn't concern this particular employee, they don't have a right to it.
Well, sometimes it pertains to both employees, though. So if you had the same memo that was...
Then you would simply excise the other person's name out, and you could do that.
Right, you would have to do that. But does this bill then allow that to be done? In other words, you're editing what's in the personnel file.
It certainly would. Yes. As long as your rule was a reasonable one.
And you think that our concerns would be protected under this part that says under reasonable rules?
Yes, I do.
And if our rules were that you couldn't Xerox the material?
That would be unreasonable.
That would be unreasonable.
Unless it was material that was pertaining to pricing or other proprietary information. If if you were saying that simply because another employee's name was mentioned in a memorandum, and the memorandum also concerned this employee, you wouldn't let that employee Xerox anything.
Right.
That seems to me to be unreasonable.
I guess the fact that it's written into the law that Xeroxing is almost like a bill of rights for them, that's what concerns us the most. That it gives the impression that the employee has the right to request everything that's in the file be Xeroxed. And I think you're saying that there are reasonable rules here, and we're saying that we're not sure that our reasonable rules can get around that declaration that they have to be able to Xerox them.
You have one of the most talented legal staffs in the entire state.
one of the
largest and the most talented, and I have no doubt that they can easily publish just exactly the type of rules you need.
I'll be glad to pass along the compliment to
please, sir. To Tony Tattolini and the rest of us. Representative Gall.
Sure, Mr. Chairman, just to play the devil's advocate, though, nothing in the comments made today suggests that devices might be constructed to prevent legitimate access to employee records because something that shouldn't be in the personnel file is in the personnel file. I'm sure that's consistent with your testimony as well, right?
I'm not quite sure I understood
what
you're saying.
Is if there's going to be some highly, you know, abstruse way of looking at this, I think what the bill says is that a person's personnel file is available to that person, period.
Right.
And if there's something in there that is germane to some secret report of a company, maybe that should be put in the secret report of the company and not put in the person's personnel file. And what we're talking about here is normal business, normal companies acting in normal good faith, normal personnel files, and not some extraordinary and, if you'll permit me, somewhat implausible kinds of constructs that might suggest that there's something in there. It's difficult for me to really get back down to basics here. If something's mentioned about salary, I don't see that as confidential. And contracts and sales, I don't see how that would be in someone's personnel file except to say that the person served at some particular place at some particular time. So,
well,
I guess what
it
I was
might
looking
be.
For was a specific example that would justify a concern. And absent that, I agree with the chairman that certainly if there's something in there that is, you know, contained in a document which is indirectly related to the person's employment and happens to be in the personnel file, clearly reason would not dictate that item, which is not relevant to the person's personnel file, would have to be copied if there were some sort of an objection by the company based on good solid grounds. But I don't know how far we can carry this speculation. It seems to me that what the bill is trying to do is deal with files that relate to the employee, and that an employee should have access to that file and not be put under limitations such as you can look at it but you can't make a copy. And the thrust of the bill is just as you said, it's to make sure that a person can look at and copy his personnel file. So, you know, if there are specific exceptions that need to be put in the statute, that makes sense to me. And if reason is going to apply, that makes sense to me. But I don't think anyone was trying to suggest that an objection on the part of an employer that the employer doesn't wish some kind of information copied is going to even remotely be grounds to prohibit an employee from making that copy. So I'm just trying to kind of get real clear about what we're saying.
I think that, you know, the practices that we have as a company right now are probably in line with the intent of this bill already.
That's why I felt free to make the remarks,
and,
as my understanding,
you know,
as well.
I don't know how much different we're going to have to do things if this bill passes, even. I know that the contents of a personnel file are much more varied than people tend to think they are. You tend to think that there's, you know, your performance review and salary review and a few hand, you know, some biographical material, but, and for most of us, maybe that's all that's in a personnel file, but sometimes there is, you know, a wide array of things in there. And so you have to be careful that if there were something that were proprietary to the company. Now, when we talked about contracts, the way that I could see that something about a contract would enter into a personnel's file personnel file, is that, you know, if there had been a disciplinary action where he was a manager of contracts, for instance, and had been abusing that policy, you know, I'm reaching because I don't work in personnel and I don't know everything that could be in there.
That's precisely the sort of thing that an employee should have a right to access.
Right.
It's a sort of disciplinary proceeding.
Absolutely.
In which they're involved.
And he has the right now to write comments for the record and get those put into his personnel file and or to disagree with something that's in the personnel file. I'm sorry that I don't have more specific examples of maybe some of the proprietary things, and I will certainly ask our personnel manager if he has other examples that he thinks maybe are relevant to your understanding of it. But I think that some of the points that I've brought out here are something that you need to think about, that there are going to be other employers who maybe have some of the same kind of heartburn, not because they don't want their employees to have access, but because it just may not be as clear-cut as you think the legislation says it is.
Yes, and I'd like the record to reflect the presence of Co-Chairman Gall and Representative Davidson, and I'd like the record to reflect that Co-Chairman Gall and Representative Davidson are here, and also that Representative Davis has asked to be excused to his own office because he is not feeling well and he is listening from his own office. Representative Martin.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering why we were switching some Democrats in and some out. And I was afraid that they were afraid that Mr. Miller and I may have control of this bill. In any case, well, how do you handle medical records in these personnel files? It seems to me that there may be a lot of situations where employees may have access to each other's record, and even the person, I can understand, you don't want the employee to have his or her own records. And you should have someone to actually do the copying for them. I have no hesitation as to your records, you have control of them. But nevertheless, how would you handle medical records, or are they in the same record file?
Generally, medical records are in a personnel file. I think in addition, like in the case of ARCO, we have a medical department, a doctor and staff on site in our building, and as well as in our facilities on the North Slope. And I expect that there are some kind of medical files in these other locations other than in the employee relations department personnel files. Those would be confidential. You know, when we talk about an employee having access to the file, that's one thing, but through the Federal Privacy Act, you have to be careful who else has access to that file, and only people who work in the personnel department and are authorized to enter a file are supposed to have access to that information.
Please.
Mr. Chairman, the reason why I ask is that that medical aspect is a major reason why the next employer may or may not hire an individual, and there may be things in there that the guy has a pacemaker, or the wife has something else, you know, or any special drugs that were always being prescribed. And somehow, I hate for a future employer to know the information that you have the right to know as the current employer when it comes to medical. I don't know how we can separate that, or how your company could be cleared of any information you give an ex-employee so that they can't say that you broke the breach of confidentiality. So, however, that paper from ARCO may be shown as the person's medical record, and then so-and-so got it down the line, a future employer, and ARCO had nothing whatsoever to do with that future employer ever getting that copy, but somehow, however, they got that copy.
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe that ARCO would ever, under any circumstances, give out the personnel file to another employer.
No. I meant to that employee. Somehow ever that give out, but you're the one that did the record. They Xeroxed it. Somehow ever another employee got it. Xeroxed it and gave it to another employee. And it's not you that started the trouble. It's these other employers or supervisors that began sending that sheet around saying, hey, look at this guy, you know. He's not too long for the world. You know, the pacemaker don't work or it's on a blink. And they do that, you know that.
That's right. clerk?
Well, I'm not quite sure, you know, because we're talking about an employee having access to his files, and I'm, mm-hmm. if there were some medical thing about himself, you know, let's talk about me. If I had something about my medical records in my personnel file, I'm not quite sure why I would give them out to anybody. You know, if I only had 6 months to live, I'm not sure I'd want a future employer to know that. But the point I was trying to make earlier with Mr. Gall was that sometimes there is some information in that file which names me and some other employees, or maybe a whole mm-hmm. department, or, you know, maybe we were all exposed to the same right. chemical agent or something exactly. at the same time. And so maybe this is what you're worried about, that there could be a medical record saying we'd all been exposed to Agent Orange on the North Slope or something, and we were going to, you know, I don't know. It gets a little far-fetched in some of these examples, but let's face it, life can be pretty far-fetched sometimes.
You didn't say the workers comp,
though. I understand you say you're using Agent Orange. No, come on.
Uh-huh. Finally got it out.
To get through the agenda, we're going to have to work fast and maybe stay over a few minutes here, so I do want to. Let me just, does that complete your question?
I only had one thing. Can the future employer be cleared that their obligation of confidentiality has been cleared once an employee xeroxes everything? I'm going to make sure that the employer who gave the information cannot then be accused later of letting out confidential information. How is that handled? In this bill, or how is it handled?
This bill does not address that question.
No.
And I don't think that's within this
maybe
bill.
Maybe I can be of help though to the record, if you'd like, Mr. Yeah. Chairman, just to say that when a state agency like, say, Child Support Enforcement is dealing with confidential records, they are permitted to give that information to the client. And if the client then leaks that information in some way that is beyond the control of the agency is not responsible. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure the same would apply to private employers. It is consistent with most of the other confidentiality statutes.
Yeah, as long as we bring it down, then.
I have a couple of questions here. First, it was pointed out by Ms. Miofsky, working for Representative Davidson, that there are specific rules in the Freedom of Information Act and in the Federal Privacy Act that might serve as a basis to construe reasonable in the term reasonable rules, and you might call that.
In fact, our rules right now are based upon that Federal Privacy Act.
Okay, well then you people are familiar with that.
Yes.
She just wished to put that in the record. I have a couple of things. You raised basically three points in your testimony in chief. First, concern the costs. Second, how long do you have to maintain records on former employees? And third, which we've been focusing on, the proprietary information and the reasonable rules. With respect to the costs, the language is that the employee may be required to pay the reasonable costs of duplication. I would think that that would allow you to assess the reasonable cost of this. And I'd like that in the record so that if ARCO has a problem with that, that you can assess the costs reasonably.
Not necessarily 5 cents a page, huh?
No. And number two, and this is something that does cause me a little bit of concern, and that is whether it would be construed as requiring you to retain files on former employees beyond what your normal business practice would be. And if this would be a concern, and it would be a concern, I think, for some employers, I would suggest to the committee that we consider adding a phrase on line 20. If you happen to have the bill in front of you, and the bill would simply say, add the phrase, nor require an employer to maintain a personnel file on a former employee. So that the total language would state, this section does not supersede the terms of a collective bargaining agreement, nor require an employer to maintain, you would say, personnel files on former employees. If you feel that that would be a sufficient problem for us to address in the bill. Ms. Ward, do you feel that that's something that we need to address in the bill?
Nor require employers to maintain personnel files on former employees.
Yeah.
I think that would be a great improvement.
Okay. Mr. Gall?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't see anything in this bill that says anything.
Hear me, Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Yes, did you hear the testimony, or are we breaking up?
No, you're coming in loud and clear, Mr. Chairman.
Fine, okay. Representative Gall?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think that we should pass a law that says that employers should maintain personnel records of employees. There isn't any such law. There's no such expectation as well. You can't very well expect somebody to access something you don't have. And I just don't see anything in here that suggests that this bill could even remotely be interpreted that way.
Okay, we have an opinion from legal counsel that may answer your question, Ms. Ward. And it's from Teresa Kramer, and it's dated February 13. And she's the legal counsel who worked on the bill. You've asked whether HB 86 requires an employer to keep personnel files on employees. In my opinion, the answer is no. Under subsection A, if an employer maintains personnel files, the employer must allow access to the information. There is nothing that affirmatively requires that the information be maintained in the first place. If I may be of further assistance, please advise. I think that that would make it clear, and that's part of the record here. If you are legitimately concerned, I don't see any harm in adding it. Representative Miller?
Mr. Chairman, that's part of the question, I think, that was raised. But I think the other part of the question is that some companies do maintain these files for a long period of time. They go to permanent storage. What is the time link? Can an employee, 20 years after the fact that he has left the company, come back to the company and ask for his personnel files to be? I think that was more of the question.
The answer to that would be yes, but the if there was cost in digging these things out, that could be assessed against the employee.
If I could clarify that too, one of the things I was told today is that I remember I told you that we keep the complete file for 1 year, usually there in the office building. Then it's boxed up and sent to documents retention, and I'm not sure how long it's kept in documents retention, but at some point, either in retention or as it's before it gets to retention, they cull through the file and they throw away some stuff. We are required by federal law to keep certain records, and I'm sorry, I can't tell you right now what, but some of those pertain to employment, some of them pertain to exposure to dangerous chemicals and hazards, and some things like that. And each of these different categories has different time frames. Like some things you have to keep for 5 years, some for 7 years, some almost indefinitely. And so what we do is we go through that personnel file and we keep the records that we know that by federal law we are required to keep for X number of years. And then after that time expires, we throw that other record away. And then, so there would be some things in his personnel file that would get thrown away. He wouldn't always be able to, 10 years or 20 years later, get the complete file.
But the point is that nothing in the bill, as intended, requires you to maintain anything after the employee leaves your employee.
But if as a matter of course we keep it for a year,
then he would have access to it.
Then he would have access
upon paying the reasonable cost
for the full year.
Okay. Representative Martin and Representative Gall.
I didn't have any.
Oh, I thought you were going to put in a call.
Mr. Chairman, I just went through sort of a three-stage thing here. First, I was thinking maybe a way that would be less confusing would be to say on line 12, an employer who maintains personnel files shall permit. But then staff to the Labor and Commerce Committee pointed out to me that this bill only applies to personnel information maintained by the employer on line 15. And so, there's nothing in here that suggest anything other than if they have it.
Thank you very much, Ms. Ward. Is there any further testimony on the bill? Are we ready? Are there any amendments on the bill? Is there a motion to move the bill? Representative Martin?
For a point of clarification. Would an absent go on for an amendment?
No, sir. Okay. I commented that if the words maintained by the employer were already in the bill, it seemed to cover that.
We're looking at line 15. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Representative Davidson.
Yes.
And I want everybody to be covered.
For the purpose of clarifying, that means nothing has been added to the bill. Your suggestion on line 20 has been dropped.
Right.
We have before us a bill that has no amendments.
What do you think with individual recommendation? Are there objections? Hearing none, the bill moves. What I would like to do is continue on for, if we can, for at least another 15 minutes or so on this other bill. I can stay till 3:30, I don't know what other people can. But I'd like to, because we have at least two bills almost every day this week, and we'll get real far behind if we don't move along. We'll see if Mike can help us. Yeah. It'd be my intent to stay on teleconference for anybody who wants to, and Representative Davis, as long as he's in his office, and we'll make sure that Representative Davis and everybody get a chance to sign the report. Next bill we have is House Bill 93. Representative Gall?
Mr. Chair, I respectfully suggest that if there's nobody who wishes to testify long distance, that we just call Representative Davis on our little local phone, which we can do from this teleconference unit, and save us $50 per site per hour.
Sure, let's do that. Linda, would you take care of that? I think we have a speaker phone.
Yeah, we can use this. All you need to do is just dial up like some.
Okay, I'll leave this on until while you folks.
If that's all right with you.
That's fine. You bet. We have, I guess, former Representative Penny Albury here.
Hey.
Welcome.
Hello, Representative.
Thank you. And you're, I guess, the only person.
That makes it 3-3 now.
You're partisan as hell. No, not you, Tara.
Duke it out a little bit more.
Okay. House Bill 93, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you know, this is called the Motor Voter Bill, and Representative Boucher is grateful to have the co-sponsorship of yourself and several other representatives on this bill. The major feature of the bill is to provide an additional means for people to register to vote, to update their registration or cancel their registration from another state while they are in the process of either registering their motor vehicle or applying for a driver's license. Similar legislation has been adopted in Arizona, Colorado, and Michigan, and the result has been an average of a 16% increase in the registered voter rolls. And for this reason, Representative Boucher recommends passage of the bill before your committee.
Go ahead. Was that it?
That's all we have to say. Okay. In your file, you have the sectional
analysis. This bill is identical to the bill that passed the House last year.
That's correct.
Okay. By the way, for everybody's information, I was the person responsible for amending it to include ID cards last year on for this, for people who don't have driver's licenses.
And both, I should mention that both the Division of Elections and the Department of Motor Vehicles are in favor of the bill, and they've indicated that in letters which I believe they haven't filed.
We've been given also a February 7th letter from Bill Brown that should be in your files. Yes,
Senor Chair.
Yes, Representative Gauld and Representative Horton. Oh, I guess we have one witness who is in Anchorage who wants to testify on the bill. Mr. Bollenbach, did you want to testify on the bill?
Yes, just a very brief comment in favor of House Bill 93.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. The ACLU does support House Bill 93 as we encourage efforts in all states to try to loosen voter registration laws and encourage voter participation. The bill seems to be an excellent idea. I think it would spread the word of registration far and wide and would, I believe, encourage greater participation in this great democracy of the state of Alaska.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Bollenbach? If not, thank you very much. Sure, you're welcome to sit in and listen to the rest of us.
Call Don Clausen, he's got four.
Okay, then Mr. Bollenbach would like to listen to this, so let's leave him on the line. I assume, Mr. Bollenbach, you would like to listen to the rest of the debate on the bill?
Well, I wouldn't mind, but it's not absolutely necessary. I do have to get back to the office.
Okay, with that, the testimony, the teleconference is over. We are offline, but we will continue the debate on the bill. Representative Gall.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I find myself in a very unattractive position of having to take issue with your amendment regarding identification cards, but I'd like to try.
Okay.
It seems to me that when you apply for a driver's license or you apply for motor vehicle registration, you are generally doing so as an act of participation in the life of the state. In other words, you probably intend to stay long enough to make the investment worthwhile. Secondly, if you don't, but you happen to be here for 30 days, you're required to obtain those papers. And if you get employed in the state, you're required to obtain those papers. This ID card is something that anybody can walk in off the street, pay us $5, say I live in Minnesota, sign up, get the ID card. And I just don't see any reason at all why the department should be required to advise a person that they can register to vote. To me, it is an invitation to fraudulent voter registration by transients who do not have any intention to remain in the state. Now, clearly, many people apply for their ID cards because they're young, they're old, they can't drive, they're blind, whatever, but many of them don't. And I think having big signs up that say voter registration here would be adequate without, since that's going to be the case anyway, under the bill, the signs are going to be up. But to put in a specific requirement that each person applying for an ID card be told they can register to vote, which incidentally, if they're going to tell the truth on their ID card, they may be saying they're from out of state and intend to stay there, just doesn't seem consistent with the intent of the bill, which as the testimony brought forth, I felt was quite specific. Let's get those driver's license and registration applicants registering to vote if possible, and I think that's a good idea, but I'd be grateful if you feel I'm wrong, if you kind of help argue, you know, defend the language in some ways in relation to what I've said, because I just don't see why it's in there.
To respond to that, my recollection is I added that on the floor of the House last year, it was my feeling, still is, that basically this is a service that is provided to people who don't drive. They come to Alaska or they're here in Alaska, and it provides them an official form of state identification for people who are bona fide residents here. And we want to assist and make it easy for people to register to vote who are legitimately here. And to do that, the Division of Motor Vehicles has a facility for getting the ID card, and they simply can should advise the people as to their ability to register to vote if they desire. It's not a big deal, and I think that we want to encourage participation, I was going to say in the democratic process, in the nonpartisan voting process. And I hope that the representative will go along with my proposal and that we can move the bill, because it's a very good bill.
I'm getting very close. Chairman, how about this? You referenced in your remarks the group of identification card applicants whom I think should benefit from this service.
Mm-hmm.
And those are those applicants who are residents of the state.
Sure.
How about if we added the phrase after the word issued and before the word under to Alaska residents?
Sure.
Rock
and roll.
Okay.
Is there Representative Miller? Sorry.
I guess maybe just to carry this a little bit farther to clarify it, I could see where maybe a non-resident would maybe get an identification card if he didn't drive. But your vast majority of non-residents probably have driver's license from out of state. That is their identification, so you wouldn't be getting an identification card to begin with.
Mr. Chairman?
Sure.
The person who is a transient passing through Haines in a motor vehicle on his way to Canada without proper ID, who?
We have Representative Davis in his office on the line.
Who walks into DMV,
yes,
and says, I got to go through the border and I don't have any proof. Can you write me an ID card? Is able to get one. And my thought was to try to support the intent of the sponsor and just put in a little clarifying language so that we don't limit access to the cards, but we limit the requirement on DMV to say, hey, I'm going to register to vote for those people who at least purport to live here.
I don't.
Because if that's onerous, I'm not trying to force it.
But let me make you a suggestion, Mr. Gall. I don't think it's going to make any difference one way or the other. If you feel more comfortable, I'll do it. Either way, it's the same. I really don't think it's going to make any difference. And if you'd like it, I'll be happy to do it. I don't think it's necessary.
Well, Max, okay.
Awesome.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Coyne.
If you want to do it, do it.
If you don't feel, I don't want to do any, I don't care strongly enough to damage the bill. And if you feel that this is not damaging to the bill,
no.
And don't mind,
no.
I'd be grateful for the courtesy
right.
to those of us who
issue,
are sensitive about the issue of
the
residents.
The phrase is, the motion is to amend by after the word issued, add to the phrase, to Alaska resident, to an Alaska, to Alaska residents.
I'm not suggesting go after the statute.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's right. It would go, to Alaska, it would go under AS 1865-310, to Alaska residents.
Yes, sir. And I'd like to respectfully suggest that we don't even do a CS. We pass out this
no.
original bill amendment.
No. Let's do a CS as a matter of policy. I'll
yes, Mr. Chairman. I agree.
And I think also we need to do one other thing, and this is going to become a who knows what unless we narrow the title.
Right.
And what I would like to do is, as the first order of business tomorrow, have a CS with a narrow title, as narrow as it can be, working with Mr. Pignalbury. And so the first order of business will be to pass it out with the Gall Amendment and a narrow title. Is there any objection?
I'd like to thank the chair.
Someone get a chance to talk, and I asked about 5 minutes ago.
I'm sorry. I didn't know
who
you
has been abusing you today? I'm
not good. I didn't see your hand. Representative
yeah,
Martin, I'm sorry.
No, I'm long done.
I just want my chance. We've already closed the title. I want to beat you to that.
Oh, okay. And we can consider that title amendment a Martin amendment.
A Martin amendment.
No, I wanted to open. I had a couple of viewers who my brother's bill from this. But anyway, it's close. Only the Alaska residency, I find problems here in making the department make determinations. It's my understanding, or it should be, that we're going to have cards up there, that maybe this should not have to be a verbal thing.
I agree.
So that every person that comes in and applies for the automobile license, someone doesn't have to read the Miranda rights to them. So there's a notice up there. If you want voters' identification cards, registration for voters, you must be here, you must have been here for 30 days, and intend to be Alaska. So put it right up there on the wall. The lines are long. I don't know if you've been there lately, Mr. Chairman, but the lines are long last year, and you get a chance to read everything. All over the boards.
Representative Cole.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you know, Mr. Martin is one of my favorite legislators because he really makes some good points, and I think this is one of them. I will not move the amendment, but I would like to hear the comments of the chair in relation to this possibility of an amendment. The way I would see this suggestion reading is on line 22, I guess I'd say at the very end, I'd add some phrase
22.
Like, no, on line 22, after the word shall, I would say the department shall implement this section by prominently displaying notice of the right to apply for voter registration. But I suspect that that might not fully comply with the intent of the chair, but if it would, I would think that would be a way to save work and bother by the officials, provide the notification, and I go so far as to say that you could just about forget about my amendment in the context of that, because I was just concerned with their being required to specifically advise non-residents of their right to register to vote. So, you know, I'd withdraw my amendment as well if you wanted to say that the department may implement the section by posting the notice.
Let me make a suggestion, and that is that what we'll do in the proposed CF, at least this would be my suggestion, leave the Gall Amendment in. And what the intent of this, as I understand it, Mr. Pignalbury, is that they would casually ask each person, would like to register to vote. But I think that Representative Gall wants to do is to also have there be a sign-up, like we do for the generic drug law.
Well, actually, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Martin, may I?
Sure.
Am I on the right track here as to what you're intending?
I
think what Mr. Martin was suggesting was that rather than require the official to take the time to make the verbal inquiry, to post prominently not only the sign that says voter registration here, but says, you have the right to register to vote right now, you know, right here at this place, or something like that. And by posting that sign prominently, just, you know, let the requirement be satisfied. And if that is consistent with your intention, I would think it would become less necessary for me then to require, you know, then, I mean, I like the language there, Alaska residents, but once the sign is up, you're telling everybody. So it makes my language a little redundant, you know,
Mr. Chairman, I don't see the relationship between the First Amendment concerning two Alaskan residents and the amendment we're talking about now, because the language in line 22, according to the sectional analysis, I don't know if that's in your file here, the sectional analysis says that the section 2 requires the department to use forms prepared by the Division of Elections and to prominently display notice
right.
of the right to
it's already in the bill.
Register to vote.
Okay, gentlemen, here's the thought that I was expressing, was that yes, the department must prominently display notice, but I think the interpretation of the chairman is correct, that this bill also requires the individual to be advised. And it doesn't say that being advised is implemented by the display of that notice. So my thought for language, and I think Terry's going to suggest delete the advised section and just say they have the right to do so. My language was to say that the department is implementing this section by posting a sign, but either way, the point was the sign is enough. And that's really the question. The business of Alaska residents is trivial.
Would you care to respond to that amendment to the report?
I'm afraid something's lost on me in terms of the connection between the First Amendment. Which,
forget the First Amendment. Okay. Let's just deal with this.
Whether or not the prospective voter or applicant should be advised by sign and or verbal advisement, it seems to me we're really taking something away if we don't require the verbal advisement.
Representative Borden?
First, the part of what we say in Alaska residents, I think that adds to it in line 15, and it doesn't subtract away from what my concern was. I just didn't want to have a bunch of nonsense. You got three different people that you go to, at least in Anchorage, when you register the tag. One of those three people are going to have to advise them verbally, which I think is unnecessary, because just having, it began very good with Representative Boucher to let those people who are Alaskans, who have the opportunity of changing addresses, they may be changing the address of doing their driver's registration, but at the same time, change the address on your voter's registration, and that helps all departments. So it was done in that manner, not one where we're going to read a memorandum of rights to an individual. And until by adding this in, you're really causing an awful lot of time and an interpretation that someone may sue someday, which is unnecessary. That you're doing two things. You're saying that they must be advised, and secondly, we're going to put the signs up. Putting the signs up does what the initial intent, in my mind, which was a representative voucher, was to allow the opportunity of registering to vote at the same time.
My own view, as just speaking for myself as a co-sponsor of the bill, is that I would like, obviously under the bill they have to put up the sign, but it's the intent that simply they say, as you're going through the line, would you like to register to vote? That doesn't seem to be that big a problem. If you wish to propose an amendment to delete, a conceptual amendment to delete the requirement of oral advising, we could take that up.
Well, it ain't gonna take, it's a simple one to make, delete on line 18 after 90 days for the period, delete the rest of that until vote on line 20.
Considering that as an amendment, are you ready for the question? All in favor of the Martin Amendment, please raise your hand. One, two.
Like two.
Opposed to the Martin Amendment, please raise your hand.
I support it in principle. I oppose it in form, so I guess...
Well, whatever form you want to make it go.
Well, Mr. Chairman, can we just discuss this for another
sure,
minute?
Sure, we certainly can, or we can bring it back tomorrow.
Tell you call the point about late, so. She may be in the room. Did you see if she's hiding in my office? I don't need to gum it up. I guess my thought was... What it really comes down to me, Max, is if you are committed to the verbal advising as well as the sign, and I'm just going to back away on this, if you feel that a prominent sign and the availability of forms is adequate, then I respectfully suggest that you don't need to give those clerks an additional verbal task, and that, a good sign and a supply of forms, is kind of enough. I don't know that an invitation to register is what we're trying to do, but making sure that it's simple and easy and that they know they can do it. Seem to be the goal, but I'll let you make the judgment call.
Well, just speaking personally, and correct me on behalf of the sponsor, I think it's the sponsor's intent, and I support that it be an oral request. Is that your understanding?
My understanding, Mr. Chairman, is that it may or may not be, and that the advisement may suffice just by the sign, but I know that he feels strong enough so that his feeling would be that, yes, most times people will receive verbal notice that they may be able to do this in addition to the sign.
This is what we're going to do. Time is getting short. This will be the first order of business tomorrow. We will have two CSs prepared, one with the Martin Amendment in it, one without. And the first question we'll take up at the time is which one the sponsor supports. And we will deal with it and deal with it quickly at that time.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
One way of maybe saving some time, I just thought of something that might help. And that would be, what if we were to say something, this would, I think, accomplish both purposes. I may be wrong, but I just want to throw it out. Mm-hmm. How about if it said,
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I'm sure the sponsor would go along with the verbal verbal advice.
We're going to have two versions here. Please be prepared to tell us what Red's position is on this. And we'll take this as the first order of business. We will take no more than 5 minutes on the bill.
There's a finance referral.
We'll take no more than 5 minutes on the bill, and we will consider it with the full committee at that time with the position of the sponsor on the record, please. Representative Martin?
Never in the voice, but I also want to know later, probably tomorrow, it said that they will forward it to the Division of Election, which is understandable. Every time you forward something, costs at least 25 cents in the envelope. So we got zero fiscal note from the Division of Election, zero fiscal note from Public Safety. I don't know how they're going to get it to the Division of Election without any costs involved.
I think it's so minor here.
25 cents a piece?
They'll send a bunch of them.
Yeah, that one in the last forever.
That's something that the Finance Committee can look at in their attempt to balance money. Time is now 10 minutes after 3. This will be the first item of business with two versions coming forward.
Hey, Max, the model of the committee should be no bill should be on the
committee. No, the other one we didn't change.
Oh, we tried.
No,
we
didn't.
So, hell, just put it in.
Yes, I did. I voted.
As a matter of fact, it's right now.
I think we should have a tight title, something about the usage of water.
I love it. This is a mining bill.
Will you guys please work?
Yes.
Sorry, you have two versions.
Both versions will have last arrest.
Right.
One will be the verbal, one will be the non-verbal.
And you boys will take care of that.
The non-verbal, who will be?
And one version will be the title. I'm thinking about using
your
water.
I'm using your water.
So this Michelle.
Work with Marco on this, please. And or Terry, if Terry's a member.
Could you get me?
These are new subsections.
Okay, how are you?
Good. How
are
you doing today?
Do you guys take care of the title change or gun related?
I'll take care of the NCS. But this is what we got so far, so you know. There's going to be two CSs, and one of them, both of them are going to have a narrower title, and you don't really care if mine is narrow. Okay. The other thing is that both of them are going to have this two Alaska residents there. And then Martin's, the one with Martin, I'm going to delete that, which I don't think is a good idea. Doesn't take too long to ask.
Yeah. Okay. We'll give you
that. Okay. So, and I'd like to see these things.
Okay.
Then you're just staff to.
Yeah.
A local address.
Local boy. How you doing? How you been?
Mark, who are the two people again? I've got to go get Davis and.
Right. And then
Davis.
Oh, the wave.
Oh,
you're doing that.
The registration.
The person actually has to sign the line. Not to be read. Okay, that's a phone for soliciting.
You mentioned that you might want to do another amendment for that.
Call it pricing amendment.
I was just telling Marco, I think where I was raised in Georgia, I think what they do down there is you automatically register the license and they pay, unless you sign on a particular line waiving that right.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. There was only the two.
Tomorrow they'll have their addresses and everything.
Yeah.
Okay.
See what you want. I'll be happy to close up.
Oh, we go.
I would say, it's the way these guys are going.
You'd be surprised how many people would rather register that way. They have to do a separate action, you know? I mean, inconvenience is one of the reasons why there's a low voter registration. And if you had an easy way for people to register, they'd do it in a heartbeat. They'd say, hell yeah, do it, you know?
Well, why don't you see whether
and it was individual rare.